there, I'm Winter Mitchell Ragnarok, formerly Rorbaugh, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show kicking over the pop culture we all love to love, with me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are journalist and novelist Margaret Wappler.
Hello, hello.
Greetings to you. Hello, hello.
Greetings to you.
Greetings and good tidings to you.
Yes, we are doing namaste hands to each other because we live in LA.
Happy to see you here, Wappler. It's pop culture scholar and dyke about town, Karen Tongson. Welcome, Karen. Welcome
namaste.
To our sacred say, namaste.
Hello, Winter. Namaste,
namaste.
This is our special yoga
special episode. We're all in dog pose. And the host of Who Shot Ya on Max Fun. Who Shot Ya? Comedian. That's the whole clip. Comedian and new... What are you, staff writer?
I'm a writer on
Tosh.0.
Oh, it's
not 2.0?
It's not 2.0. No, but people
think it is. He's tricky like that.
Yeah, he fucks with people.
I like it. It's Ricky Carmona.
Oh, hey. Mucho gusto. Saludo. Namaste. Todo eso. Ore, ore, ore.
Cuba Libre.
Cuba Libre. Siempre. Siempre. Por favor. Hello, everybody. How are you? Good to see everyone. Thank you for having me.
So happy to see you.
It's good to be here. It's good to be back.
How was your Thanksgiving?
Real good. I didn't go back home, so that was awesome.
Well done.
Not that
I mean, I don't know your family, but well done.
Sounds like it was a choice.
Love the family. Love them very much. Love them dearly if you're listening. I feel you. But I do hate the cold. You know, my family's all in Chicago.
Oh,
and
that's
it's
my
like,
land,
nope.
too.
Just
that's not, a big old nope
exactly.
on that.
I mean, it's not even like a... We're at the point where it's like not even a conversation anymore.
They Can I get some coordinates? Like, where in Chicago?
On the north side of Chicago. So it would be kind of like...
Extra chilly.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Definitely not like on the lake, but... We feel all that lake effect wind. Yeah. It fucking sucks.
Yeah. It was the first place that I've ever seen where you had to walk to another building through a skywalk in the sky.
Is that what is this?
Oh yeah, you're talking about like the Northwestern building.
Yeah, like
there's
like
a few of those.
Connecting
but
Bridge.
That's
yes.
one of them.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. People, it's too cold to walk outside, so you walk through this.
Yeah,
skylight
I mean,
in the sky.
We prepared for it. Minneapolis is the first place I saw it. Like when
I think they're all mole people in Minneapolis.
Yeah,
they don't even go up; they go down.
They go down. Strange place, Minneapolis.
Love them though.
Coming up in this week's show, holiday horror.
Yeah.
Not whore. I don't really enunciate.
Horror.
Your holiday horror.
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 There it is.
It's like the rural juror.
Rural juror. Blah, 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 blah. Plus, we'll be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment, news, or events that have caught our attention this week. Wappler, what are you all about?
I'm all about Roma, which is the new film written and directed isn't it classy?
It's a
very classy. Thank you so much.
Need to like have cloth to watch this. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
To have what?
Like cloth napkins to
watch.
Oh,
for a minute I thought you said clogs and I was like, wait a minute, no. It's directed by Alfonso Cuarón, written by him too. He's the director of Children of Men, Y Tu Mama Tambien, and Gravity. He also produced, co-edited, and shot this movie, so clearly his heart was in it. It's a real labor of love. It's based on his life growing up in Mexico City in the 70s. It's beautifully shot. It's in black and white. It's very sumptuous. He even went so far as to bring books and furniture from his childhood home into the house where the movie is shot. He cast the movie himself, like searching for all these children actors who play his siblings. He wanted to find people who looked exactly like his brother and his sister and so forth. So, I mean, he really put so much of himself in this movie. And the focus of the movie is on the live-in maid whose name is Cleo, and she's played by Yalitza Aparicio. And she cares for four young children, and she has this warm but still kind of distant and professional relationship with Sofia, who's the matriarch of the house. And Sofia is struggling in her marriage to Antonio, a doctor who comes home early on in the movie from a conference in Canada and is just very critical and kind of checked out. Like, he's always criticizing what Cleo is doing. He's criticizing what the kids are doing. He's just not into it. Cleo is actually based on a real person who cared for Alonzo as a child, Liboria Libo Rodriguez, and she's actually thanked in the credits, and she's been speaking to the press a bit, mostly about how Alonzo misbehaved a lot as a child. It's very interesting, this movie, because to my American eyes, it like brings up some complicated class dynamics. Like, most middle-class families in America don't have a live-in maid, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, right away, that's sort of jarring to see a woman who basically gets up and straight away enters, like, the children's rooms to get them dressed and make them breakfast, and then she's there putting them to bed at night. You do get to see her have, like, a social life and all that, but it's a little shocking to see that kind of relationship. And there is some interesting discussion I've had amongst friends about, like, you know, is this Alonzo's sort of romanticization of his own childhood, particularly this woman who basically waited on him like hand and foot. And he's said as much himself. He's basically said, you know, this woman was from an indigenous culture in Mexico, much poorer background, came basically like sacrificed her whole life to my family. And I decided to like turn my vision to her and just tell her story. And the story is beautiful. It's heart-wrenching. I cried so much during this movie at certain scenes. I won't even touch what these scenes are because they're so, like, I don't want to spoil anything about it. It's so special to get in there yourself. But go and see it. It's really beautiful. It's really moving. It'll make you think. It made me want to go live in Mexico City in the 70s, but it's too late now for me.
Right. It's too late for all of us.
I'm afraid so.
To be honest. It's interesting because this is one of those films that was, it was at the Venice Film Festival, and now it debuted in theaters and on Netflix at the same time.
Not quite at the same time. It's actually in theaters now in like a small run, but the small run is doing well.
The window is short.
Yeah, it's like sold out in L.A. and New York, but it's going to be streaming on Netflix, I believe, starting December 14th. So if you don't get out to go see it, you're going to be able to see it on Netflix. So it's an interesting release the movie's having just from a business perspective. And I think partially because even though he is a decorated director, like, this is still the type of movie that would have been hard to get like a big widescreen release because it's a quiet story in many ways. It's a beautiful story, but it's quiet. And so, yeah, I think once he saw Netflix was willing to give him the kind of opportunities he wanted, he ran with it.
Ricky, what's your all about?
My all about is, it is nowhere near as serious. I feel like we just said.
I usually bring this serious.
Oh, is
I don't
that
even
right?
really
okay.
try, but I just.
She really does.
What I'm all about right now is, it's twice now that I have watched Adam Sandler's new special on Netflix, 100% Fresh. And that is the exact reaction that is okay to have before you watch it. I mean, you can have whatever reaction afterwards. But I think we're all so used to, based on his movies, justifiably so, because not all of them are great. A majority of them are not great. But we forgot how great he is on stage, just being himself, being funny. And this special, which he put out last month and is now available on Netflix, is fucking fantastic. It's one of the best specials I've seen this year. It's filmed at, I want to say it's like at least five different locations across the country, and they all vary in size from like tiny little small clubs to like huge kind of arenas. One taping was done here, actually right across the street at the Dynasty Typewriter Theater. I saw it when he filmed it there. If you watch the special, you can see my big smiling ass in the front row. Like,
I love
you're still funny.
You paid the cameraman for that.
I got the hookup, yo.
You
I got the hookup.
Hook
I got the hookup. I ain't gonna lie. Shout out to the Dynasty Typewriter. But this thing is, I mean, he's Adam Sandler, y'all. He's made bad movies, but he's fucking hilarious. And the jokes range from like just short, absurd, ridiculous, where is this non sequitur going one-liners, to like just these long, great stories that are also absurd. He has this great story that he tells about riding a roller coaster. He's supposed to ride a roller coaster with his wife and kids, but they like edge him out of a seat, and he ends up having to ride a roller coaster with like another dad where the same thing happened to him, and they both are very awkward about it at first. But at the end of the story, at the end of the roller coaster ride, they're basically like best friends, and then, I mean, it's just fucking fantastic. He sings songs in it that are great. He has a fucking real emotional song at the end about Chris Farley.
After a show, we drink a quart of Jack Daniels and stick the bottle right up his ass. But hungover as hell, that Catholic boy always showed up to morning mass. We tell him, slow down, you'll end up like Belushi and Kenny. He said, those guys are my heroes, that's all fine and dandy. I ain't making that shit up, that's the truth about my boy Chris Farley.
That is just...
Oh, wow.
It's, I mean, it's, when I was like watching it here, like when I was watching it in person and on the show, you're just like, I thought, am I supposed to be laughing right now? Because what's happening is I'm getting emotional inside, and I didn't come here to cry in front of a bunch of people, but I think we're going there.
Do you think he saw Nanette?
It's Adam Sandler's Nanette.
Adam Sandler's Nanette.
He is wearing the same blue blazer. It's very weird.
Is it weird to, you know, I think about, like, in my reporting heyday, I'm such a loser. I was on like the studio beat because I had all the relationships, and like seven out of 10 of my studio stories were to like industry for Us Weekly. But I was like on Adam Sandler's ass because he was getting paid so much money by Sony for making these movies, which they did business, but they weren't feeding the greater good. I mean, let's just be honest.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the
God,
time...
God, I hope he socked that money away.
I'm sure he did. So is it weird to see
him... He's still making it, too.
Yeah, he's still making it.
True.
But, like, you know, as one of the few comedians that has been able to sort of sustain and also be unscathed, I mean, I think, you know, Chris Rock had that too special... deal with Netflix, and they both sucked.
Oh, you didn't like Tambourine?
Not at all.
Oh, wow. I loved it.
I was mad the entire time.
Mad?
I'm completely convinced he hates women.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
I didn't, you wouldn't, if you asked 18-year-old me, would have been like, you crazy. And 38-year-old me is like, he's a piece of shit.
Wow.
So it's like, is he, I just don't think he made the transition for me as a fan to now. Like, maybe I'm just way more.
As far as Chris Rock, you're saying.
Yeah, but okay. For Adam Sandler, because men are his primary target audience.
Yeah.
You know, any man you meet that's, you know, between 30 and 50 can watch an Adam Sandler.
Yeah, I would say, it's like young, it's fucking teenagers.
Really?
Still to this day. Oh, wow. For sure. Yeah, I mean, what was he's still making movies with David Spade, you know? I mean, he's you know, what is it, The Do-Over?
Yeah.
And then... The other one, like the, not The Hateful Eight, but like it was like a play on The Distinguished Six or some bullshit like that. I mean, here's the thing too, like I watch movies, I know what I'm into and what I'm not into and what's made for me and what isn't. I'm not gonna hate Adam Sandler because he makes movies that aren't for me. Those movies just aren't, like, it's not necessarily my kind of humor. And when he does make one that's my kind of humor, it's on a Paul Thomas Anderson scale. Like, I love Punch Drunk Love.
Right.
I can watch that movie once a day, every day. Mm-hmm. No problem. Mm-hmm. You know? If he makes more movies like that, I'm all in. If he's going to do, you know, like this Hateful Six or something.
Is there a place for him? I'm asking. Is there a place for Adam Sandler in 2018?
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Comedy doesn't always have to be, like you said, it doesn't have to be Nanette. I think a lot of times, because of what is going on in the world right now, we think comedy needs to have this. If you're up there, make sure you're saying something important. Cool. I also could, you know, have a little song about masturbation every once in a while because I just need some dump. And we all need, not that he has a song in there, but we all need dump shit every once in a while.
Wow. Breaking news.
Yeah. You know, I talked to 30 people today. 29 of them wanted to talk about how the world is on fire. And then there's that one person who doesn't want to talk about it. And I want to spend the whole day with them.
True.
Because we need some fucking escapism. We need some. There's
Adam
nothing
Sandler
wrong with
that for you.
Yeah. This special is. I don't want to. I also. Yeah, I mean, I'm not wearing
any Adam Sandler lesser.
I'm not
products.
Wearing an Adam Sandler jersey right now or anything.
Anytime
I'm saying
you
this
put
was great.
On an Adam Sandler special in my house, the whole world stops. Karen,
Yes.
I'm assuming it's food related.
I have some. Yes, of course it's food related because it was Thanksgiving week.
Right.
And, you know, like I barely had any time to watch anything, so it had to be, you know.
Well, I barely had time to enjoy anything to eat. So please indulge me.
Well, so the thing that I'm all about is a new Netflix show, and it's called The Final Table, and it has tremendously high production value, and it's a global cooking competition hosted by Bon Appetit's Andrew Knowlton, who's wearing very, like, posh skinny suits, and he's been coiffed up by the producers. But it's my all about because this thing that I was ostensibly supposed to really like and be just completely addicted to really fundamentally disappointed me, made me feel weird, gross, angry feelings at the same time that I could not stop watching it. And the premise of the show is that there are, it begins with, like, I can't remember how many teams of two chefs who are working together from all over the world. You know, like, you have this pair from, you know, a dykey chick from South Africa, like, with some, like, hapa German-Japanese guy who cooks in the Netherlands, okay? And so you start off with these teams, and each week they have to tackle a cuisine from a different country. So, you know, from Brazil to Mexico, Spain, the United States, and, you know, they have to make a national dish, blah, blah, blah. Right. And all of the production value that goes into Chef's Table and all of those Netflix shows is poured into this lovingly, into this show. But it felt clinical and odd, and also the host was just weird and squirrely, and his voice was annoying. And lo and behold, the Rocketeers, many of them agreed with me, actually. Joe Fegeron started a thread.
Love
and
him.
He was sort of, yeah, and he was like, hey, you know, Karen, what do you think of this? I mean, I sort of am into it. And I'm like, most of us admitted to watching it all and, like, not being able to stop, but kind of, like, finding it elitist, bombastic, super douche bro-y.
oh, my God.
You know.
But terrible.
I know, but also, like, some of the food was, like, weird and intriguing, and it's, like, I don't know. There's somebody who, like, really liked this guy, this French guy, Charles, who I thought was, like, a really pretty, like, woman for a period of time. Mm-hmm. I was just, like, he was very, very interesting. Maybe that's why we were all watching it. But I do agree. I will say, I will close my statement about this by quoting one of our Rocketeers, Sarah Lebo, who said, I hate it. It's stupid stage, all glossy and black, like a late 90s club. The confusing way the duos are presented, the incredibly time-wasting editing, how embarrassed I am for all involved with the seriousness of it. I hate that Netflix didn't think, oh, Great British Bake Off is popular because it's non-competitive, supportive, and casual without faux drama. Let's do something in that vein. And let me tell you, when you have your U.S. food experts coming in to judge the first round being Colin Hanks, Dax Shepard, critic from the New York Times. I'm like,
gotta
think about
it.
I know. I'm just like, but also it's just like, it's all white men.
He's asking himself the question.
What am I doing here?
My dad's a living legend.
My dad was in Splash.
What am I?
Yeah. So anyway, I know all of you are watching it and are going to watch it. But let me warn you, it is one of those strange things that you just, like, it's kind of like when something smells and you just keep smelling it, or like you get like
Yeah. How I know when I smell an airplane fart in public, not in the air, I'm like, who fucking farted?
And you're just like
you were on an airplane.
Yeah.
Bombastic. Yeah. That's bombastic.
Bombastic, or like you keep getting like a little slight static electric shock and you keep doing it over and over again. This is what it's like. Good luck to all of you who are doing that.
Piggybacking off.
I like it when we have a backhanded all about.
Yeah, now I'm like, oh, I could have talked about some shit I don't like.
You can. You just have to spin it, baby. You just have to spin it.
But something you feel like you have to talk about.
Now,
you
know? I'm all about hating the fuck out of this. I'm all about, I mean, I watched The Sinner season one because I was finally trying to figure out how in the EFF did Jessica Biel get nominated for something when I've never seen her in anything where she acted like she wasn't just a wall.
Blade 3, though.
Round one, fight.
Come on now. Blade 3. Come on.
Let me just tell you, Blade 3 got her a husband. Blade 3 got her a couple of false starting franchises. Mm. That's what I'm saying.
Blade 3 got me out of the series. I was like, nah, I don't need any more of these.
Thank you
I'm
very
good.
Much.
I'm
who
good.
Benefit? We should have an entire episode. Who benefited more from Blade 3?
The answer is not Wesley Snipes.
The Sinner. It's based on a German novel. It's about a woman who's seems kind of off kilter, but otherwise has a nice, fine life in some New York suburb upstate, and she out of nowhere, this isn't a spoiler, she just is,
she does it in the first 15 minutes,
she does it literally maybe 12. She gets up, she's at a beach with her son, her young toddler baby son, and her husband enjoying like a beach day. She tries to suffocate her drown herself. That doesn't work because they're looking for her. And then she stabs and murders a man out of nowhere. So I was like, in. Let's do this.
Play next episode.
Skip intro. Yes. I get it. I love this show, even though it was so fucked up. And I think the reason why I love the show, it's so good, is because Bill Pullman is always like happy-go-lucky dude who just, you know, can't get it together, but I'm trying real hard. And he does this character in a really raunch way, which I loved. I loved, you know, you just have to watch the show to understand what I'm saying when I'm saying that. It's like he's took who he will never stop being into another, on, you know, and played this character to like a whole other level without it getting super creepy. You have like empathy for him.
He's a detective in this.
He's a detective in the show. And then Jessica Biel's character is, you know, a mixed up woman. She's just born mixed up, brought up mixed up dynamic with the family, gets mixed up in a situation. And I like how they play all the different scenarios. Like, you kind of know what's about to happen. You see it coming from a long way away. But it's I felt like for people who have been brought up in what would appear to be idyllic scenarios, ending up having like catastrophic situations happen to them that they try to put away. I think that got to me a little bit, that emotionally, that gripped me, because as much as she thought she was able to sort of forget whatever it is and like make up colloquial, like interesting scenarios around to make herself appear more tough. Like, you know, she's telling people, she's, you know, pretending that she was a heroin addict when in reality,
Something else was going on.
Okay.
You know, there's just this story. It was like a basically 24 episodes of a soap opera.
Wait, Jessica Biel acts all of this?
Yes. Oh yeah, it's amazing.
I believe the shock. I know you're shocked, right?
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's the first, like, the first thing that Sarah and I binged in its entirety, the whole first season, in like one night.
Same
basically
here.
Since we watched the first season of Scandal, you know.
What's
it was
it
like
called
the,
again?
The Sinner. And it's not a whodunit but a whydunit.
Yeah.
Right? Because so like and I think that there are more and more shows exploring that terrain, and that the real kind of like psychological forensics of, you know, what, okay, like it's so funny to see her dissimulate and to provide these different false reasons for why, and then to go beneath that and find out why the true reasons had to be concealed or were buried beneath all these psychic layers. It's really amazing.
Yeah. I recommend watching The Sinner if you get a chance, and please talk about it on the Facebook group. Anyway, you're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back to talk holiday horror after this.
Hi, I'm the JV Club podcast, Janet Varney, and I used to suffer from indecision. I couldn't choose between Star Wars and Star Trek, whether to call or text, or the best way to cook my eggs. But now, thanks to my weekly dose of We Got This on Maximum Fun, my decisions are made for me. Thanks, Mark and Hal!
Warning, We Got This may cause shouting, phone throwing, the illusion that the hosts can hear you, laughter on public transit, and death.
We Got This with Mark and Hal. We know what's best.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host this week, Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh. With me in the studio are
Margaret Wappler.
Karen Tongson.
Ricky Carmona.
Amazing. Thank you guys for being here. Pencils down. as you guys know, I'm a huge horror buff, and I, you know, love horror movies. Try to watch a minimum of 2 to 3 a week. We're running out of horror movies, by the way. So if anybody can, I'm so serious, please make a recommendation. We've ran through every streaming service, and I mean like 8 of them, including Shudder.
That was my first question. Are you on Shudder?
We have cleared the Shudder. But I'm curious about Christmas horror. There seems to not be a deluge, and there's not as many. So I'm wondering, like, I kind of asked you guys to look, and thank you everyone for participating, because I know that was a tall ask, because all of these movies are fucking shit.
I was giving you the side eye while I was watching Silent Night, Deadly Night 2. I was like, I'm going to find out why the fuck winter is making me do this tonight, yo. What is going on here?
Because it's one of those movies when you, like, in the 80s when they used to have Up All Night, it was one of those movies.
USA Up All Night.
Yeah, it was like whoever was the programming director at USA for Friday nights was like, I know what, you know, if the boss came in and said, what are we doing for Christmas? He was like, I've been planning this since July. Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 on Friday. We've got this. You're good. I just kind of want to see, like, what you guys think is the traditional horror holiday film.
I mean, you know, one of the things that your ask made me think about was just why the holidays are a perfect time to kind of insert some horror into them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think it's a moment where we're kind of reflecting on, like, a lot of things about our families and our relationships. And what I noticed from some of the films that we watched for this week is just that there's a lot of that going on, but it's really the dark underbelly, that dark side that, like, nobody really likes to represent on the holiday card or in the Christmas newsletter, but that's totally there.
Yeah.
And in that period where there's a kind of lull, it's winter time, there's a lot of darkness in the sky, and I think that it's that moment where if you are hanging on by a thread, like the holidays, you know, fuel depression, fuel murderous feelings. This is where people snap, and this is where people enact or are capable of enacting various violence. And I think that, you know, there's no accident that so much of these holiday horror films take that version of the family and just basically show, like, what the truth is behind that shiny Christmas card and behind all those lights outside of the house, you know? Yeah.
As far as like being an audience member, I think there's something to, like, I did my research. I listened to your show last week. I listened to your Thanksgiving episode. But a lot of what was last week was your Thanksgiving episode, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
A lot of what was talked about as far as, like, in movies is, like, the conflict between families and the stress and tension that all that can bring. And sometimes you just want to fucking rip that turkey leg off and stick it in your grandma's throat. Because what the fuck? Nobody talks like that anymore, grandma. You can't say those words.
Yes.
But we can't actually do that. But you're telling me I can go to a movie and I can just sit there and be removed for it and be able to, like, enjoy that kind of, like, sadistic feeling? Then yes. I mean, the holiday horror movies totally make sense to me because it is fun to watch that. It's fun to watch the contrast of, you know, Santa Claus being terrified of that motherfucker, you know, as somebody who, you know, when you're a kid, you just can't wait to see Santa Claus. But then now, you know, when you're 18, you find out there are these movies where it's like, you know, Santa Claus is chopping the head off a nun. Yo, Santa Claus is chopping the head off a nun.
But, you know, there are plenty of little kids who also scream and cry when they see Santa for the first time.
Yes.
So it's also that duality is, like, always there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think what you're talking about is sort of catharsis, right?
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Where you can't, you know, during Christmas and during the holiday season, you're not supposed to speak of any darkness. You're not supposed to talk about fear or depression or feeling alienated or sad. You're supposed to be locked into the cheer and locked into the good times and drinking your eggnog and be so happy and gleeful that you're with family. When in reality, like, a lot of people feel, if not dark feelings, at least, like, something more complicated, right?
It's complicated. Yeah. Absolutely. 100%.
Like, you know, you can have a wonderful holiday season, and inevitably, because life is complicated, like, something may happen or somebody may say something that's going to upset you or whatever. And, like, unlike every other time of the year, you don't really get to sort of say it, you know? And I think, like, the sort of, like, Jungian idea that, like, if you can't say your fears, they get worse, is sort of what gets enacted in Christmas movies. And if you get, Christmas movies are the safe space for us to express our fears and to express like our malaise and depression or whatever it might be. Because there is nothing worse, right, than like enforced cheer, than being told that you have to celebrate and feel good when you don't want to.
Yep.
I think that there are two Stephen King films that we can think about in this realm of holiday horror. One, of course, is Misery, that was specifically released on November 30th in 1990. And, you know, with all of its like wintry gloom, again, though, like Kathy Bates' character enacts that like enforced cheeriness in creepy ways, like you dirty bird, you know, like,
she's like a broken ornament.
Yeah, exactly, like a broken ornament. She flips out at like a broken ornament, essentially, or like when he breaks something in the house, a Hummel statue or something. And of course, The Shining, which was not released in the wintertime, but that New Year's Eve plot line with deja vu and all that stuff, like I always associate it with a kind of tail end of the holiday season. Mm-hmm. Again, this kind of the sense of the oppressiveness of winter, how it makes you snap, like seasonal affective disorder, and all of those things that make families want to kill each other, literally. And so I think those are two of the kind of you know, things in the catalog that are very classy in the way of holiday horror. But there's so much excellent holiday horror camp, too. And I think all of us really, like, upon Winter Suggestion, dove into Black Christmas, for example, in 1974, which, as a point of trivia, is the first time a horror film ever had the call is coming from inside the house situation happen.
Yeah.
Now just put the phone back on the hook, walk to the front door, and leave the house.
What's wrong?
Please, Miss Bradford, please just do as I tell you.
Okay.
I'll get Phil and Bob.
No, no, no! Don't do that, Jess! Jess! The caller is in the house.
The calls are coming from the house.
So Black Christmas takes place at a sorority house. I believe it's like six women. There might be more, but it kind of focuses on these six women who live in this sorority
Untold
house.
Numbers of women.
And yes, a plethora of women. And this is back when phone landlines existed. Yeah. So there would get a phone call and one person would go answer the phone. And the girl answers the phone and she's getting like these like just nasty fucking old sex calls. I mean, not
super
even like
creepy
sex calls, but just creepy ass breathing, heavy breathing, weird voice changes.
I just want to interject really quick that I read that one of the actors stood on his head to render a creepy voice for one of the phone calls.
Oh, I believe that. Wow. Yeah, I believe that. I mean, that aspect of the movie is very, every time that phone rings and you hear those that voice come up, it's terrifying. So like these women are getting these calls, throughout the night. One of them goes upstairs and we find out that somebody is inside the house and murders this one girl. And then over the course of, I don't know how many days or weeks, these women are getting killed inside the house, hidden inside the house. And we are trying to solve who the mystery is of the killer. There are red herrings throughout of it could be this man. It can be this movie reminded me of, remember the back in the days when movies would just remind you that white dudes were evil? You know, like just like that weird generic looking white dude.
Whether he wants to be your boyfriend, he's the mailman, he handed you a card.
He's the like bailiff or whatever.
Yeah. Every one of them are just like, shady. Shady.
All of the men were shady and creepy.
Yes. Yeah.
And just to add a bit more to your synopsis, like I think it's amazing that the director of this movie is Bob Clark, who also directed The Christmas Story. Like, who would have thought, like, the lamp leg lady guy would also direct this?
He
which
knows
is also
how to shoot around a house. He knows how to shoot Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Basically.
It's kind of his wheelhouse.
This
and it's
his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And this is like the first slasher film, right? This is also like the movie that people cite as like the first movie that just doles out the killings.
Absolutely, yeah. This
you look so just doled out the kill and
just gives us that kill count nice and high.
It has a very similar, the beginning of Black Christmas has a very similar opening to the beginning of Halloween.
Yeah.
Halloween is heavily influenced by this movie. When a Stranger Calls, heavily influenced by this movie. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, which is interesting because the remake is just, I don't know if you guys get a chance to watch it, but it's just off the charts. It's the same trope and tone of the first film, but it goes like light years into just debauchery. And in this film in particular, they really lay into the narrative about the killer's background, Billy, and the fact that he's a product of incest. And
in the remake, yeah,
that he, you know, is it's brutal that he's also a cannibal. So there is a plate.
I think
of,
it's laying it on a little thick to give him an incestuous history. Oh,
that's why I'm saying
he's a cannibal.
That's we're talking about, like,
and his name is Billy.
And his name is Billy.
Well, because I love that 1974 is very much more about like the kind of ubiquitous horror of white masculinity.
Yeah,
right?
Yes. Yeah.
And then, but also like. One of the things, too, is just, like, the women in that movie, in the sorority. I want to be in that sorority without all the murder
stuff.
Cool.
Yes.
It's like also, Margot Kidder being a total drunk.
Margot Kidder being a total drunk.
Andrea Martin is great. It took me forever to finally realize that was Andrea Martin. Her
and
hair
is
on point.
And the girl, Jessie, who's really, like, the central character of the movie, without getting into her subplot too much, but that, to me, was the most... engrossing part of the film. Mm-hmm. She basically has an argument with her boyfriend about what to do with a little situation they got going on. And to me, it
shows... That's historically relevant.
Yes, that has like interesting feminist ramifications. So go see it, baby feminists. Or not go see it, but find it for free on YouTube like I did. But basically, like, I thought that was super interesting that showed a kind of creepy factor of like this guy that you've had sex with and you're intimate with and you've like had all this trust and whatever can just go darker and darker and darker on you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was not expecting that angle, that subplot, that like B storyline at all. I'm telling you, when I started watching this movie, I don't know if it was like something in like an email exchange you and I had, Winter, or that I'd seen. I was like, there was just something where I was like, this movie's gonna be some silly, you know, fun. I can talk shit through it. And I like the first like 5 minutes, I'm like talking shit at the screen.
Of course.
And then I was just like, wait, this is a good movie.
Yeah.
I thought Winter was like, I'm just gonna like be like, ah, gah, gah, gah. You know? And like I got super stoned before it, but then I'm like having real feelings.
Yeah, I know.
And then I start watching Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, and I'm not as stoned anymore. Then and I'm like, what the fuck is happening now?
What is this? I wanna move over to Child's Play. Child's Play is a Christmas movie. You're welcome. Mm-hmm. Child's Play is a Christmas movie. And it's one of the realest Christmas movies out there. It's about a mom who works at the, who's not doing well financially. You know, it's a sucker move, but it's a desperate move that she had to do because she wanted the happiness of her child. And she didn't know that literally a day later from getting this doll, that it was going to push her best friend out the window.
How's she supposed to know? She's trying to raise a baby in real life.
Now she got to figure it out.
She's got to figure out what this doll's up to. Come on, man.
That's so cruel, the idea that this poor mother... It's just
that
like
was like the most empathetic retelling of Child's Play. That was like
a little
the
bit
therapist.
Of revisionism there, but you know, you can figure
just
it
like
out.
That, you know, this poor mom just trying to get her kid
get
a doll.
Get by.
Trying to get by.
Chucky is a piece of shit. Chucky took this doll. Chucky took this child to an abandoned warehouse.
I can say that without reservation.
Chucky was cold.
Yeah.
And Chucky came from an era of cold villains.
Yes. Yeah.
Freddy was cold.
Yes.
Yeah.
Freddy, who's a warm villain?
I think that when we talk about cold, it's like the enjoyment of it. Michael Myers didn't enjoy it. It's just what he did. Mm-hmm. Murder was just his thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
So maybe like Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
Hannibal was... He was, again, enjoyed what he did.
Certainly did.
But it was very like,
with
you know.
With some fava beans.
Yes.
And
it was very like, you know, it was a sport for him, if you will. But when it comes to somebody like.
Freddie.
who's just
Chucky.
It's just the pure joy.
I would say, I mean, this isn't a holiday movie, but like, you know, like the Ghoulies, which was similar to like Gremlins, were like, they just had like this extra little attitude to what they were doing.
Yeah.
Whether it was like a smirk or a zinger. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very much so. Very
this
much
is
so.
Like, don't distract us from this.
Yeah, I got shit to do right now.
I got shit to do right now. Murder You is on the menu, whether you like it or not.
Speaking of literally cold, though, like, you know, holiday horror, it's all about cold things like Jack Frost or whomever, like these cold, like, you know, like murderous snow people and like the whole thing.
You didn't watch that.
I do have to say, though, that because I knew we were supposed to watch a movie called Jack Frost, I started to watch a movie called Jack Frost from 1998. The horror film came out in 1997, but the one I was watching is the one with Michael Keaton.
Oh, God.
Where he gets reanimated as a snowman. And for me, just the opening scene of him pretending to be a rock star named Jack Frost was deep and profound horror.
Yes.
I agree. I watched the trailer of it, and I was like, this seems like a horror movie, not intentional, and I'm going to opt out for my own self-care.
Imagine being Michael Keaton in 1998, only 10 years after Batman.
I know.
And being like, look, I know I've played seminal legendary characters, but this is bullshit. But the check is amazing.
when I started watching that movie and saw in our script that it says the murderous snowman sexually assaults a victim, I'm like, Michael Keaton's gonna sexually assault someone in this movie?
I was as a snowman? As a reincarnated snowman?
I love doing that to you.
So like, I was like, wow.
That happened.
Mind blown.
No, Jack Frost, the horror film, is a tough watch. I don't know if you guys, anyone got a chance.
I passed on that one. You know, I was like,
just no go.
You know, we can also skip that discussion because why? Literally, my question on here was, should men not exist? But then I said, Ricky is here. So I was like, no, we need our Rickies in our life.
Thank you.
And then let's just quickly talk about, because I made you watch it and you might as well talk about it. We can talk about Silent Night, Deadly Night at any moment. And that movie actually came out in 1984. It was super controversial. And it was something that Nathan Martin said, which I think is very interesting from the Facebook group. It's not a good film, but it's interesting to think about how accepting and callous the culture has become about this sort of thing. Hence my last previous conversation about cold killers. If it were released in 2018, the ads for this wouldn't even make people flinch. And that is 100% true. But let's talk about the sequel, because this also follows the same trope about how sequels from that era tend to not really follow, and it's always just some legal bullshit involving like a screenwriter and some Alan Smithy type dumb shit. But like Silent Night, Deadly Night doesn't even follow the first.
Yeah, and I haven't seen the first Silent Night, Deadly Night, so I was trying to come up with fucking theories as to what is happening here.
Yeah.
I was like, is this like a Back to the Future Part 2 scenario where we're going back and revisiting the movie and seeing it in different angles? Because what happens is, in this movie, it's the younger brother of the killer from the first movie who is now being interviewed by this doctor, this shrink, and he's telling him how his brother became a killer. And then throughout that, so then we get flashbacks. Are you checked out already? Margot's done.
You're reminding me, I watched the trailer for this and I was like,
So we learned
it's the troll too of Christmas horror.
Very much so. Yeah. Very much so. Yeah. I mean, we learn the origins of this story, but they don't really make sense. And then, you know, 2/3 into the movie, it does finally start to tell its own original tale of like,
an hour and 25 minutes. Let's also note that.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of got hyped when I saw that. Yeah, I was like, this movie is not bullshitting. There is no fat.
75 minutes.
Yes. There's no fat on this movie at all.
In and out.
So then it kind of does become its own, like, we are now following the story of this killer that is, you know, at the time. But, I mean, the motherfucker is just, like, suffering from trauma.
Yeah.
And then is going around into, like, you know, I think he's in Burbank or some shit. He's like walking up and down the street.
Yeah.
You know?
On garbage day.
On garbage, the garbage day scene.
Garbage day.
But Silent Night, actor, Deadly Night, there's no snow in it. It's just Burbank.
Yeah.
No,
in Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, there's at the beginning of the movie, there's snow.
And pre-target
Burbank. But then as the movie goes on, I feel like as the budget was running out, they were like, yo, it's
like,
fucking.
No fake snow.
I can't even make size, my man.
This actor who is the lead as well, this was either like the end of his movie career or the beginning of his entry into porn. Like, you know, you're not really good for real movies, bro.
But he disappeared for 30 years and then just recently popped up, as we discussed before the show.
Yes.
So that makes me think it was either porn or just insurance, which is always a plausibility.
The kid from Silent Night, Deadly Night 2.
Yes, who I kind of
his acting is just. I mean, it's laughable. It really is. Like you watch it and you're like, who told him to act this way? And then we both read the same article. Then I read another interview with him. Where he is just like, I know I was shitty as hell in this movie. I was terrible. I'm very aware how awful I am in this movie.
Yes.
The producers and the director gave me no direction while we were filming the movie. So it was just like the two producers and they would be like, say it scarier. More crazy. Louder. Like the garbage. The garbage day scene. He's like, yeah, like the first time we shot it, you know, I did it very like quietly and kind of sinister.
Yeah.
And the producer was like, louder.
He's like, garbage
yeah.
day.
And that's the take they used.
You please
print it.
Cut.
Yeah, cut. We got it.
And by the way, the budget was $100,000. You know, thank you guys for indulging this because I just came up with this off the top of my head and I didn't really think too hard about it.
It was great.
Good.
No, it was really fun.
I enjoyed it.
I really am glad to have seen Black Christmas.
Me too.
And, you know.
Black Christmas is a legit good movie. Like, I was.
It is.
At the end, I was like, this was, dare I say, a film.
It's a film. Cinematic.
He strokes his goatee.
Yes, if I may.
It was, dare I say, cinematic.
It was a source text for many other great cinematic horror films.
Yeah. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back after this.
This holiday season, we're flooding the Max Fun store with our biggest ever new product launch. 17 brand new items from some of your favorite shows. I bet you know someone who needs a new shirt or mug, maybe a hoodie. Cozy up in a pair of Max Fun logo socks or keep the sun out of your eyes with a Rocket Dad hat. There is literally no better holiday gift for the Max Fun fan in your life than some new gear. And hey, pick yourself up a little something too. You deserve it. Check it all out at MaxFunStore.com. That's MaxFunStore.com.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Winter Mitchell Ragnarok, Thor 2. With me in the studio,
Margaret Wappler.
Karen Tongson.
Ricardo Sandalio Carmona Ortiz.
I love it. Is that how your mom used to call it and come after
you? Yes, that's when I knew I really
Slash Ragnarok.
Slash Ragnarok.
Before we get to our jams, last week we asked you to call in if you had any topic suggestions for the show, and someone from the 203 responded. Let's listen.
I would love, 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 love to hear you guys do an episode about the movie that came out earlier this year, Assassination Nation. It's queer as fuck. It's gory. It's violent. It's amazing. Imagine, like, Kill Bill with four Beatrix kiddos. Yes, please. Thanks.
I mean, I did want to see that. I mean, it's really hard to get to movies, but now that it's a... You know, maybe it's something that we can dip into, like, when we have our winter break.
It's ringing bells, but I can't remember what it is.
More like, Wobbler!
They're
a
Wobbler!
I don't know if that joke has been done.
No.
My apologies.
It came out. It has Hari Neff is in it. My girl, who's a wild child, and probably Lindsay Lohan, too, is in it. We'll circle back.
I would see. I would
you
see,
guys don't know.
On my drive into work, I would see. I would see posters for it all the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's sometimes I'm a fucking movie snob. I'll admit it. And every time I would see the poster, I was like, interesting. I'm
Bella
not going
to
give you my money,
Bella
but
Thorne.
I will see it when it's on Netflix. Hmm. Like just visually,
I
it
just
popped off
it.
That
it's
way.
Just, it's so great how Netflix has branded itself because I can immediately. I can. It takes me 3 seconds. And I'm like Netflix. Link
yes.
gets there.
Yeah,
I'll get a notification.
Totally. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it.
So stay tuned for Netflix 203.
Yeah.
But I love the idea, the analogy you said of Kill Bill with four Beatrix kiddos. I mean,
I do
you are
that.
Speaking my language right there.
Don't think that we're dismissing you. I'm totally going to watch it. We're just not running to the theaters to see it, okay? Love you. How's Connecticut? Okay, each week on the show, we ask a very important question. What's your jam, Wappler? What's your jam?
I got a jam for you. It's from my buddy Phosphorescent, otherwise known as Matthew Hawk. His new album is out called C'est La Vie. It's his first album in 4 or 5 years. He left Brooklyn, went to Nashville to have some kids, and this is New Birth in New England.
She said, don't I know ya? Honey, don't I know ya? Honey, don't I know ya? It was the very first time we laid eyes on ya. Your mama burst into tears.
Ooh, that's so cheery.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's poppy.
I know. I heard this song on the radio just driving home the other night, and it immediately struck a chord for me, and I was like, this is going to be my happy place all week. Hey. And I've been listening to it nonstop, and it I think it's just so sunny, and it has these Paul Simon kind of riffs
yeah.
to it, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. also with like some kind of weird like Jimmy Buffett cross-pollination
yeah.
in the lyrics. I don't have a problem with that
no,
personally.
No, like, it's got some 70s like vibes in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
And it also reminds me of just like the feeling that a bar has when it's during the day and the bartenders are like mopping, but it still feels good in there. Like you're having a beer and the sun is shining through like some dusty old window. It just has a really good feeling. So get on it, people.
Yeah.
I dug that.
Mm. Katie.
This song is so obnoxious, but I am totally going to share it.
Shocking.
Because it's holiday adjacent schlock and awe. Mm. And it's from the recently released Greatest Showman Reimagined album, or the pop covers of the soundtrack from last year's surprise P.T. Barnum musical hit starring Hugh Jackman and Zac Efron, among others. So
we can
now
discuss
it's
on another episode if it was a hit or not. But
well, it's like a weird slow burn. And now I think enough people have seen it on airplanes and begun
yeah.
to like it.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's
airplane effect.
That's a version of a hit to me. But there are a lot of pop stars who contributed to this compilation. Everybody from, you know, Kelly Clarkson to Pink, Panic at the Disco, Sam Bareilles, et cetera, et cetera. But this one is my fave. It's like kind of my uplift anthem, and it's really ham-fisted, but I'm into it. It's by Kesha Kayala Settle, who was in The Musical Waitress, and Missy Elliott. And it's called This Is Me. The Reimagined Remix, in parentheses, which is, again, very ham-fisted. And I'm here for its excess and overkill. So here we go, looping into Missy's extended rap break.
I got confidence because enough flies in the room. And I've been knocked down, but I always get up. I had some fake friends, had to go and switch up. Yeah, no pain, no strain. I ain't chasing all the fame. Because I got more to gain, and I'm just trying to make a change. I'm just doing me, I'm in my own lane.
I love, like, you know, come on. Like, radiant. Like pulsating, undulating choral voices beneath Missy Elliott. Come on, sign me up for it. Anyway, it's brand new. I think it's a good holiday album to listen to because it gives you that, like, I want to spend money in the capitalist sensorium feeling.
Totally. But also, how is this not in, like, a Nike sneaker commercial yet?
Yeah.
Like, this is such a, like,
this
workout
is a New
song.
Balance.
It's so new.
Sneaker commercial.
Bam!
Thank you, Karen. Thank you for your thoughts.
Oh.
I love you. Katie.
I'm impressed at how you were able to throw shade at the song and not Missy there. Because I was like, oh man, I hope let me. As soon as I heard Missy, I was like, I'm in. I'm feeling this. Yes. But then just in my head seeing The Greatest Showman and all that happening.
That's
I was like,
what was happening in the back of my
doing
head.
Doing the robot yeah. out the room. Yeah. I can't be seen with that I'm enjoying this.
Pure holiday schlock.
No, for sure.
No, I just literally saw myself.
Lean into that shit.
Like, Ricky, your song is going to be.
It is by the band Sounds of Blackness, a gospel group. This is from 1991. It's called Optimistic, y'all. And it is exactly that. This where the song kicks in right here. I don't know shit about Sounds of Blackness. I know this song was nominated for a Soul Train Award, but I was first introduced to it back in high school by my drama teacher, who was always like one of those, "Hey, up yourself, Ricky. You're gonna handle your shit. Believe in you, dog." And I was like, okay, all right, cool. And it's just such a great goddamn song.
Ooh, I love this song.
Right? I mean, this shit just makes you feel like you can accomplish things.
Your head to the sky. Be optimistic.
Yes, right? Oh, I don't know who that girl is, but she reaches a goddamn Patti LaBelle level of like
spirit.
She has to
lay down after every take.
I hope she is rolling on the floor like Patti, singing. I want all that shit from her.
Is this at the end of a Spike Lee movie?
I bet you Spike would put this at the end of all his movies.
Exactly.
You know? And well deserved, too. Like, I listened
it's
to it
song.
Four times walking through Hollywood today, and it was just like, I wish a motherfucker would say something to me right now. I will throw roses at you. I feel so goddamn good. Come on. Try and take me down. You can't do it.
Wow, we're on some posse vibes too.
I literally have been saying that for a week.
Where are you going to keep it? Are you going to keep
it on
the posse vibes?
It's going to be on the posse vibes.
All right.
This song, this is still a posse vibe. Like, sadly, Diddy's the mother of his three kids, sadly passed away last week. Kim Porter, she's just like a legend in the game. She's, I don't want to like call her just his baby mama because that's disrespectful to her. I mean, she was obviously a rock and a support system. But, I was thinking about how, Diddy has always presented like this persona that he's lived up to for about 20 something years. And seeing him, the humanization and having empathy for someone going through trauma like this and going through a sad situation like this, he's been surprisingly reserved and really super respectful, which I found like that was like the heart of Diddy to me, like this is obviously struck him. And I don't know why I heard this song for the first time ever. I'm a big fan of Finding the Origins of Samples, and
yes.
All About the Benjamins is one of my favorite songs.
Yes.
And I heard Great to Be Here by Bacal Rhythm and Steel Band. Here it is.
Oh, hell yeah, there it is. Yeah, that is the Tan sample.
That's
what's up. Hell yeah.
It makes me feel great to be here.
Yep.
I mean, like, I wish they would play this when I get to the Bahamas instead of Funky Nassau on repeat. We get it. Nassau's funky.
Yes.
So this is a good song.
That shit is hot.
That shit was
I love when you're hearing a song, especially like you're not aware that it's where the sample came from.
Yeah.
And then you just hear like, whether it's
I
those
felt.
Like 10 seconds, you're like, I know that. I know what that is.
You always right after feel a bit of like, wow, I'm lame because I didn't know that. And I feel disrespectful to this piece of original material.
I mean, I'm sure you did. You grew up listening to hip hop. So
yeah.
There came a point where I had to turn that switch on of like, if I like this hip hop song so much,
I need to
go back and do the digging.
And that's exactly
yep.
what I do now.
There you
Thank
go.
God for maturing. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Winter Mitchell Rohrabaugh, with Margaret Wappler.
That's for all y'all.
With Margaret Wappler. and Karen Thompson and Ricky Carmona.
Yeah, I know that guy.
Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ossie Miso. Thanks to him for letting us use it for the 5,000th time. Thanks to everyone for the 5-star reviews in iTunes. Don't see him here. If you haven't already, please review us. This week, we'd like to thank Zero Suit CJ. And that person says, because I don't know if you are he or she, them says, a great cast covering all things pop, and I really mean all. The hosts keep me chuckling, and their femme and queer perspective is hella important these days. Are you from the Bay? By the way, you can leave a 5-star review in iTunes and call us. You can do both. Did you disagree with anything we said on the earlier episode or agree with all my opinions? You really should. I will love you more. let us know. You can also call in with a topic suggestion like 203 did. Do you also agree with him that we should do an episode on Assassination Nation? Can you find 5 other movies I would watch before that? Give us a jingle at 530-237-4108. You'll get to hear Karen Thompson with the cold say, hey, Rocketeers. get it? Wow. I like that.
Clean that mic off real good.
Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket, or join our Face group and join the discussion.
Face group.
It's, you know what? And please don't join our group if you're just trying to, like, tell us to send you money.
don't forget about our Instagram.
Don't forget about our Instagram, Pop Rocket Podcast. Also, don't follow us there if you're trying to get us to follow you because you just post pictures of potatoes. we're a production of MaximumFun.org. You can tell I'm a digital manager because I'm just over all your ruses. just done. We're a production of MaximumFun.org. The show is edited by Shayna Deloria. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.